over the recent weeks looking at some of the fantastic species that are potentially benefit from this project. Now, today we're talking about woodland birds, but we're talking about a wetland.
That's right. So we are a related part of the story, I suppose, for people, given that for those people who do come and join us on Sunday the 9th of October and see the site, they'll understand why we've made a big deal about wetlands, because the wetlands certainly are the central feature of the property. But if people are familiar with that neck of the woods, they'll also know, if they've ever driven past the Marshes Native Forest Reserve, which is next door, that the wetlands are interspersed by quite significant areas of woodland habitat and heath. And so in terms of what our long-term goal will be for the property, it will be also to restore habitats in between the wetlands and around the wetlands, which means that we'll get this rapid response from the wetlands themselves, and there'll be a longer-term goal to try and return the swamp gum and stringy bark woodlands and heathlands as well. And that means we also get a benefit for some other species that we haven't been talking about yet. And we're very lucky to be joined by David Baker Gabb today, who is an expert ornithologist or bird person. And he's certainly been involved with bird surveys around southeastern Australia for long enough to have seen and understood what's happening to our woodland birds, and particularly in the agricultural regions. And so it might be good to get a sense of that first, David, before we tackle an iconic species like the red-tailed black cockatoo.
Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So we're talking about these bird species that we do have here that like these habitats, what are the types of species that we were focusing on?
Well, I think if you take a little step back and sort of take the helicopter view of the area in the southeast, there are some key areas, and all of the most important areas for woodland birds that remain are those that, if you take a landscape, say 10 kilometres by 10 kilometres, if it's got 30% retained native vegetation, that can be wetlands, woodlands, whatever, then you have a lot of resilience in your bird community. And when it gets down below that, things start to slide. And there are many areas in the southeast that would only have around 10% of retained native vegetation. So even common birds and common small mammals like grey shrike thrushes or rufous whistlers or sugar gliders start to drop right out of the system. You just don't have them anymore. So adding pieces back into the jigsaw is a really important thing to do. And it's every little bit adds to the network. So your hard work shouldn't be viewed in isolation. So anything a farmer does or a blocky or something, it does add back into the system. So that's an important starter, I suppose. And then if you look at coming to the Mount Burr Swamp woodlands, there's some really high-quality stringy bark remnants there, which have blue gum plantations around them. So you're likely to get, you know, quite a few of the rarer birds that are listed as rare in South Australia in those remnants, things like scarlet robins and restless flycatchers and Jackie Winters. These are, you know, perky little woodland birds. Scarlet robins, obviously a bright little bird that many people might be aware of. So, you know, that's an important contribution, but you can enhance that habitat. And so connecting it up to the Marshes Reserve is an important thing to do, because some of these birds aren't particularly good flyers, like, say, chestnut-rumped heath wrens, so that heathy forest or heathy woodland is where they live, but they won't disperse into that area from the Marshes unless there's fairly good connection for them to do so.
Are they looking for this type of habitat? Is this mainly for nesting? Is this for feeding? Is it for a bit of everything?
It's a bit of everything, really. And the better the quality, the better it is for feeding and breeding. So something like a Jackie Winter, which you might see, you know, out in quite open farmland on a wire, a little brown bird with flicky tail, during the winter time, needs to move back into higher quality woodland with a shrubby understory to actually breed. And farmers will be aware of them, perhaps. They see them going from along the fence wires, and they have this Peter, 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 Peter call. So, you know, people out and about will see them around, but then they disappear and they go into the better remnants to breed. And so they need that shrubby layer for breeding in and also for foraging, but also to avoid some of the avian or bird thugs that are out there, like noisy miners. These are a native species that gets around in teams of, you know, half a, or 10 to 20 in a colony, and they basically exclude all other birds from an area. But they're really only found in low-quality, degraded habitat, so improving the quality, getting an understory that the little birds can escape back into, means that they can avoid these aggressive species and also a number of the predators that are out there.
Right, so it's interesting. It's not just having the habitat there, having the woodland available. It's also, as you say, the quality of it is really important as well.
Yeah, so big old trees means, you know, higher quality because they've got hollows that owl at night jars and tree creepers and pardalotes and a whole range of bats and small mammals can find to nest in or roost in. And logs on the ground are really important, and then the understory that's not choked up with weeds. So veld grass is, you know, something that spreads through the understory, and, you know, once there's veld grass into a woodland, locking it up is not really the idea, not suitable, because short bursts of heavy grazing will knock that veld grass out, because birds need an open understory, little patches of open with litter, because some of these robins and Jackie Winters are pounce hunters. They pounce off branches, low branches down onto the ground, and pick up little insects in among there. And if it's choked out really dense with invading weedy grasses, then that, you know, certainly not very helpful. So there's lots of things that can be done to manage them, and Nature Glenelg is certainly aware of, you know, what needs to happen down on the Mount Burr Swamp there.
That's right. And so I suppose to jump to red-tailed black cockies, Dave, obviously this stretch along the Mount Burr Range is part of a network of woodland reserves with some really good areas of brown stringybark woodland, and although it's going to take longer for the to restore woodland habitat, obviously, as we were discussing earlier, wetlands bounce back a lot quicker. Our long-term plans will certainly to be returning feeding habitat for redtails by planting lots of brown stringybark out there across the property.
Yeah, well, as you say, Mark, there's only about 1,500 of these birds left in the world, which is a very small number. And, the southeast is cocky central for them, the red-tailed black cockatoos. And they're basically limited by food availability. They only eat the seeds of three trees, two types of brown stringy bark, and further up to the north, they feed on bullock seeds, which occasionally, but brown stringy barks are their mainstay. There's remnants of brown stringy bark on the Mount Burr Swamp a lot area, and those trees are actually in good condition and could be feeding habitat straight away. But removing some of the blue gum plantation will remove the competition. And you might note, Mark, that up on your other property, Eagle Hawk Waterhole up near Bangham, there's a lot of big old stringy barks that are paddock trees. So there's one, you know, every 20 or 30 metres of the tree, rather than being stacked in like a forest. And it's on the edges and on those big paddock trees where the trees don't have so much competition for moisture and other resources, but they actually produce a lot more seed for the cockies. And so they are really attractive. So I think you might find that in quite short order, if you can reduce some of that competition from harvesting a few of those blue gums in the plantation that are right near the stringies, then the big ones there will really kick on, and they can put on, you know, a good seed crop in within 2 or 3 years. And then it'll be a matter of, you know, putting in other, you know, replacements for the blue gums over time. So that will be a much longer process.
Yeah, that's right. I suppose the other species, of course, up at Eagle Hawk that we've been planting a bit of, which isn't suitable to go into Mount Burr because it's a bit far south, is the bull oak. And that plays a different role in the in the cycle of feeding and reproduction for red tails, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it's the blue gum, so the South Australian blue gum, or what Victorians call yellow gum, Eucalyptus leucoxylin anyway, is an important habitat for the birds, but that's more of a, you know, produce big old trees there and the producing nesting. Oh, sorry, so you're saying bulloak?
Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah. Obviously in those blue gum woodlands, there are some often areas interspersed with bulloak, which is where I was going with that, David, my understanding is that the bulloak can be quite an important finishing off food resource for getting good young through.
Yeah, it doesn't produce seed every year, but when it does, it's really important.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but those blue gum, South Australian blue gum woodlands are really important up at Eagle Hawk for a range of other species which don't occur so much in stringy bark.
And I guess it's probably worth pointing out to people, if they're not aware, Nature Glenelg Trust already owns a reserve up near the Little Desert, which is just north of Francis that we've been talking about. And if people are interested to see the site or be involved in some of the things that happen up there, they're welcome to make contact with our office as well, because we have things happening up there from time to time.
Fantastic. Well, David, thank you very much for making time to join with us this morning. And it's fascinating to learn a bit more about these beautiful birds.
Thanks very much. I think it's an exciting project.
This is David Baker, GAB consultant ecologist. Some very interesting food for thought there.
There is. And look, obviously, if people listening, we've only got a week and a half to go. So if people have been thinking, oh, yeah, I'll get around to chipping in, now's the time. We'd love to hear from you. So if they could contact our office or visit our website, which is ngt.org.au, or contact the office on 8797 8596, and talk to Jess, we'd love to hear from you.
And keep that date free, Sunday the October 9th.
That's
to come
out
and have a look. Well, Mark, we'll have you back again next Wednesday. Great to see you.
Thanks very much.